Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. It's my great privilege and pleasure to be joined tonight by Sequoia, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Sequoia.
Hi, Michael.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I have to tell you, it was a moment to hear myself introduced.
Great. Great. And now recorded and archived for posterity.
Oh, you could have gone without saying that.
Okay, I shouldn't. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Let's go back. I'm really excited that you're here, and it's a great privilege and pleasure to have you with us today.
Thanks, Michael. It's great to be here and to be with you on the show.
Oh, good, good. Sequoia, I know that one of the meditations that monks devote a lot of their lives to is working meditation, and I'm wondering if you could tell us what that's like.
Sure. It is true. It's the way we spend a lot of our day here at the monastery. And, I'm a normal, run-of-the-mill conditioned human. And before I came to the monastery, work was like one of those things that, kind of the four-letter word.
Yes.
It was a thing that you did, and if there was a way to get around it, or, you kind of looked for the time when there was downtime and you didn't have to work, which was the way I was viewing work.
Yes.
And so here at the monastery, I have just had this great opportunity to watch while I'm working. And it took me some time to figure out how meditation and work went together.
Well, fascinating.
Yeah. There was work, which was what I just described as something, hard and to get over. And then there was meditation. I remember the day here at the monastery when it kind of fell into place. I was having one of those challenging days, and I think my the inner mentor came in and said, enough, this person doesn't deserve to have any more beatings or have a harder day than she's already having.
Yes.
And I had been given a pretty easy job of washing windows, and I was washing the window, and I started to hear self-hate come in with, oh, this is, you're not doing this right. This is a terrible job, da-da-da-da-da.
Yes.
And suddenly I just thought, drop it. Just drop the story and breathe. And I just remember it happening. And I dropped the story, and I washed the window, and I dropped the story, and I washed the window, and I was with my breath. And all of a sudden it dawned on me, this is working meditation.
That's so great. So you're there at the monastery for some time, and then you're doing the windows, and the inner mentor is right there. And it sounds like you saw in that moment the possibility that you could be there doing working meditation, washing the windows, and it didn't have to be the four-letter word that you were talking about earlier.
That's right. And I think, it's true for me, it's probably true for a lot of us, is there's this really young part of me that does enjoy working, that kind of gets excited about everything that she gets to do.
Yes.
And then she'll start out in excitement, and then it's quickly taken away by self-hate, who starts in with, all the reasons it's not fun and it's not going well.
Yes, yes. And it sounds like from what you've described, you found a way to support that young part of you who's excited about whatever's going to happen.
Yeah, yes. I hear her when she gets a work assignment. She usually says, oh, boy, I get to. And then, quickly it's followed by, oh, no. That's impossible. So,
right.
So, it's wonderful to have that support here to stay in that first sentence. Oh, boy.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, and I love the way you describe that, to stay in that first sentence and really to be with that part of you who's excited about whatever's going on.
Absolutely. And any of us that have spent time around young children can see that, they're having fun.
Yes.
And they want to participate and they want to contribute.
Yes.
And, you know, I just realized so much of my life is spent in work, and I want to be having fun doing it, and I want to be a contribution.
Oh, that's so great. I mean, if we're gonna be working, then why not enjoy it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a big part of our lives.
Yes, it's a big part of our lives. And why not enjoy it rather than listening to the voices telling us how we're doing it wrong, it's the wrong thing, we should be doing something else, and whatever it is that's spoiling the possibility of being present to the beauty reflected in the windows.
Yes, yes. And yes, and all the beauty that's around us at all times.
Yes, yes. And I, too, have been around young children, and they're just excited, and it really doesn't matter what's going on or what's not going on.
Yeah, they haven't learned to say, oh, yuck, it's the dishes.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about how working meditation is like sitting meditation.
Well, you know, that moment at the window was really the time that I saw how much it is like sitting meditation. In sitting meditation, I have the opportunity to continually come back to the breath and drop the story, come back to the breath and drop the story. And, you know, it seems, at least for me and I think others, it seems to be a little bit more challenging when I am in the process of engaged in work rather than sitting still. It becomes much more easy to get distracted. But the process is very similar, that process of just being there with the breath and dropping the story moment by moment just to watch how we cause ourselves to suffer.
Uh-huh. Dropping the story, being with the breath, dropping the story about how we cause ourselves to suffer. And as you said, when we're moving around, moving in our bodies, when we don't have the white wall and the physical stillness, it can be more of a challenge to stay with our breath and drop the story.
Yeah, that's been my experience.
And it sounds like also your experience washing the windows is you know that possibility. You've had that experience of doing working meditation in the same way that you do sitting meditation.
Absolutely. And then, you know, it just changed things for me to know, to see that connection. And I saw the possibility how life, all of life could be in meditation.
Uh-huh.
With being with the breath and dropping the story, being with the breath and dropping the story.
Yes, being with the breath and dropping the story. I love the way you describe it because it's so straightforward. You know, it's not a 10-step process.
No.
it's you know, it's be here. It's pay attention to the breath. You're paying attention to your work, whatever it is your assignment is. And as you do that work, you're aware of how the voices are trying to comment on that.
Yes. And thank God it's not a 10-step process.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
That would probably be too complicated for me. So, yes, the simplicity of it is not to say that it's easy, but that is it really appeals to me.
Yes. Yes. And the way you've described it, I think it certainly appeals to me, and I suspect it would appeal to everybody. Skoya, can you give us a brief summary of the benefits of working meditation? I know you've talked about them, but if you were to sum it up for us.
To sum it up, I mean, working meditation is to just take your life back, you know, to take back the joy of your life. Every time I drop the story, every time I'm with myself in kindness, every time I'm with my breath, I'm taking back my life, and I am just enjoying it, being present to it. And it's precious to me, and that's where I want to live.
Wow. Wow, that's inspiring. Taking your life back. That's great. I think we can all do that. Sequoia, thanks for the great privilege of talking with you today.
Thank you, Michael. It's been great.
Great. Okay, you take
care.
I'm
going to go back to work. No.
Okay.
All right, Michael.
Thanks, Sequoia.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
Good. That was fabulous.
Yeah.
That was very inspiring.
It was very inspiring for me, too.
You know, I was thinking when Sequoia was talking, I know we can't do this because, you know, people go, so cutesy and new age and all of that. But I wish we could call it something other than working meditation, because that dualistic view of life that the two of you were exploring, where, you know, we're told these things are fun and interesting and these things are hard and unfun and boring. And really, work, what we talk about as work, is simply participation.
Yes.
You know, in
yes.
the old days, if you were going to eat dinner, you had to go feed the cow and milk the cow and plant the vegetables and harvest the vegetables and cook the vegetables. And, you know, it's just understood that participating in life gives you back what you need from life to continue participating in life. And it, at some point, it got turned into this is my time where I get to do what I want and have fun. And that means don't do anything I don't want to do and don't really participate in anything other than what I've determined is what I want to do. You know, and then I have to go do this other thing, this terrible thing, to get money so that I can then have my time and be able to do what I want to do. And the whole thing is just so artificial and really does remove us from what Sequoia was pointing at, which is just the joy of being in your body, being alive, doing something.
Yes.
Like those little kids that say, say a little Martin or a little Robert, you know, where, you know, you open your eyes, let's go. You know, and go could be, you know, 2 feet away, but let's go. You know, we're here, we're alive, let's live.
Yes.
And then we get into this awful conversation that, as Sequoia was telling us, you know, that she got to that point of seeing how that conversation robs her of her life, and that what's really joyful is just being there, fully there, completely present, washing the windows. And then the choice really is straightforward. You know, would I rather live in that conversation of misery, or would I rather be here actually participating in life, fully alive?
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, the answer's pretty obvious when we get clear about what's going on.
Yeah, it really is. So, that was fun.
Yes, yes.
It makes me want to go out and do something.
Yes, indeed.
Maybe a radio show.
Sherry, it appears that they've scheduled a construction outside my house for the same time as the radio show here.
Wow. Well, the good news is, Michael, we can't hear it.
That's good. That's good. And the other good news is you'll be doing most of the talking.
Yes. I often do. You've noticed that too, huh? Yeah.
And we have a stack of callers here.
Good. Let's get to them.
Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Kristen.
Hi, Kristen.
Hi, how are you?
Good. I'm very, very, very good. Very well.
I'm good.
Yeah, and you?
Good. I'm really good, yeah.
What's going on now that we're so good?
Well, every time I listen to the radio show, I think, I want to call in. And then when I really go to call in, it's really a different experience.
Yeah,
so
I don't want you to call in.
Yeah. So I just decided yesterday that today I would call in no matter what. So I'm here, and one of the things I was noticing as Sequoia was talking about, she said that working meditation was like taking your life back.
Uh-huh.
And I was sitting there thinking, okay, which thing am I going to, of the 40 things am I going to talk about on the call? And what came to mind right right before she said that was the idea of giving, like donating. And because one of the things that is a big thing for me is money. And one of the aspects of that is like donating, because there's a part of me that really wants to donate money to, you know, like somebody will say, you know, this organization needs money or whatever. And this part of me jumps up and goes, oh, I want to do that. You know, just this like, yeah, I want to do that. How can I do that? How can I find extra money to do that? And then this other part of me says, no, that's crazy. You don't have any money. You can't do that. And so what I did was...
I know which one I want to go through life with.
Yeah. Well, exactly. So I thought, well, why don't I just try it out? So I decided to be a monthly donor for the monastery, and not because, I mean, only to do it as a workshop, really, to do it as to, okay, let's see about that and what that does. And when she said that working meditation was like taking your life back, that happened just as I had that thought, and I thought, that's exactly the money thing for me, was, you know, like, I want to donate because I want to take my life back.
Yeah, because I don't want to have to be in that kind of relationship with those voices of doom and gloom. I just don't want to.
Or those voices, and telling me what to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and exactly. Yes, more precise. Yeah.
Yeah,
the ones who want to be in control of your life and seem to be pretty darn invested in it going their way, not your way.
Yeah, and it doesn't even have so much to do with the money.
Mm-mm.
Because then I'll be able to, what I see is that I will be able to figure out who I want to give money to and that sort of thing, and not have someone telling me, oh, you better not.
Right, you can't do that, you don't have money. Well,
right.
I'm sorry, I need to be somebody who gets money.
Right.
Yeah, I'm going to be somebody who gets money so that I can make choices about what I do with money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then
once
we go in that direction, you know, you can't do that, you don't have money. Boom, the door closes. With the other, okay, but I want to be a person who has money for whatever I want money for. And I'm not talking about yachts and Rolls Royces, because obviously what you want to do is contribute to people that are doing things that you feel good about. So you want to be a person who has that kind of money. As soon as you say that, then the possibilities, you know, doors just start opening in every direction.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking of. So
this afternoon I stopped and got something to drink, and I was sitting there drinking my tea, and there were two women sitting a little ways away, and one of them was saying to the other one, well, you know, I would really like to volunteer somewhere, but you know, I only have so much energy, and so I don't want to do anything that's too taxing. And I thought at the time, wow, you know, what I wanted for her, if I had my little magic wand and could wave it over her head, you know, find something that lights you up so completely that when you leave there, you have more energy than you came in with. But it's that same kind of story of something wrong and not enough. You know, I don't have enough money. I don't have enough energy. I don't have enough time. I don't have enough, you know, and as soon as we buy into that, we can just hear the doors closing.
Yeah, and this whole donating thing is really like going in the opposite direction for me.
Yeah. Oh, because it's generous. I remember years ago, reading with Deepak Chopra, as a matter of fact, and he wrote something that, along these lines. He said, always go first class and the universe will follow suit. And I knew intuitively what he meant. You know, I mean, we could get hung up on, but there are people starving to death and you're going to go first class and how selfish is that? But that's not I project. That's not what he was saying. He was saying that life will give us whatever we expect.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Jesus, I think it was Jesus, wasn't it, who did the seek and you'll find, knock and it'll be opened. That, to me, that's all that same process. If you ask for more, you'll get more. You'll receive more. If you are in a conversation about not having and not enough, and that's where your attention is and that's what you're focused on, by golly, that's what you'll get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I agree with you. It's huge, and it really has nothing to do with money. Money is just a... Do you know about the class we're getting ready to do on Monday?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm signed up for it.
Oh, good. Yeah.
I've been waiting for that class for like 20 years. So.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's the whole thing. In fact, I'll tell you this little insider piece of information. Somebody who got the email about the money class was trying to write to a friend about
mm-hmm.
the class and inadvertently wrote to us. And the email said, you know, I don't know. I don't think I want to do a class on this. I think I'll just get the book. And inside, I thought, yeah, there you go. There is the voice rooting for your failure. Because if we could read a book and it would support us in making a change in our life, like the change that we're talking about, that something like money or time or energy can be a symbol for, then it would have already happened. It would have been done.
Mm-hmm.
But to go through that kind of process with practice, with sangha, looking at all of the nuances, all of the aspects that are involved, and having support for getting to the other side, that's how life changes.
Mm-hmm. And it sort of feels like, you know, it's kind of similar to calling into the radio show, where part of me obviously really wants to call in and it gets all excited, and then the other part is really scared to. So it feels like I'm at this place with it where it's sort of taken a blind leap, although it's not really blind. I mean, there is certainly this part of me that wants to do those things, whatever those things are.
There
you know?
Is certainly there's an element of trust, but I project for you now, it's more proving it to yourself. You have the intuition. You know what you want to do. There's that kind of, like, you're out on the end of the high dive. You know, you've had the training. You know how to swim, you know, but you've never gone off the high dive. You know you can do it. Everybody says you can do it. You're pretty darn sure you can do it. But there's still that little moment of, and then away you go.
Yeah, actually, that does ring true that you're saying that, yes. Well, thank you, Sherry. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. Don't be a stranger.
I won't.
All right.
All right. Take care.
Bye. You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Kristen. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to take a quick sponsor break here, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
The Zen Blues Quartet is a collaborative music project celebrating life and the music of the blues. Good musicians and good friends coming together to make something really beautiful, simply because we can. Zen Blues Music. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life, my mind. What a life, what a life.
Please visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
I sure do love it, I sure.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have several more callers here.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Virginia from Washington State.
Hey, Virginia.
Hi. How's it going? Good. I'm good.
Good.
Yeah, how are you?
Excellent.
Great.
I haven't even had a chance to tell Michael this, but I got a little package today,
uh-huh.
and in the package is a vibrating watch. And you know what is even is right up there with I have a vibrating watch? Because we've been talking about this for a long time, right? It's pink. So I am just almost more happy than a human can actually bear to be, but I'm bucking up.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's inspiring. Well,
in your world,
in my world, well, a couple things. First, I just want to say that I'm being told right now that I don't have anything to contribute, and that's partly why I called, because I just wanted to, you know, kind of jump in.
Yeah, and that's, you know, once we catch on, and I know you have, it's worth it just to hear that nonsense one more time and recognize it for the nonsense that it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just to do something and hear the voices say, meh, 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 and just go, you know, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. And so also I wanted to report back to you, Sherry, that the last time I spoke to you, you, and it seems like work and money are the, what you guys have been talking about up until now so are such pertinent issues. And last time I spoke with you, you suggested that I, when I, as I was going to work or when I got to work, you know, there's a voice that there's a really heavy voice that, well, it doesn't want to go to work. And you suggested I just tell it, well, you know, this is my job. Go get your own job. You know, something to this effect.
Find a job you like.
Find a job you like. Great. And so I want to tell you that I did do that. And it was really amazing what happened because it was kind of like Sequoia said, I felt like I had taken my life back. It's like for a few moments, or actually it was more than a few moments, but at that moment, I kind of got in a different way that conditioning, I think maybe for the first time actually, that conditioning isn't me. I mean, I know you've been saying that.
But what a great moment to actually get it, to feel it, to know it, to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, exactly. And so then I was riding my bike to work, and I said, and I did that, and then I rode my bike home, and it didn't want to go home either, so I was like... You know, don't go there either, you know. Find some other place.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, so it was very helpful. And I still do it because I notice it's still, you know, it's still there. It's just, you know, being attentive and, I guess, directing my attention to the other.
Yes, and since you are dialed into aspects of the personality, remembering that at all times, in all situations, you can ask the part of you who is the appropriate person to be there.
Okay.
So, you know, if you have to take your car into be serviced,
mm-hmm.
then take the person who really likes to be responsible for taking good care of things.
Yeah.
You know, don't ask the person to do that who's always running behind, who has a huge list of things to get through,
mm-hmm.
who never has, you know, you let that person stay home at the desk and make lists or something.
So, Sherry, do you mean just like saying, for example, saying, oh, I know, you know, I'm just trying to anchor it for myself. So,
There are a couple of approaches to it.
Mm-hmm.
One, you could just say, I really need the person to step forward who likes to take care of things like cars.
Okay.
All right,
okay.
You can do that. But when that person comes forward,
mm-hmm.
and you get to know her or
mm-hmm.
him, then you can say, you know, what shall I call you? and then you can say,
mm-hmm.
you know, whoever that person is,
mm-hmm.
Could you take care of the car this afternoon?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you'll still need to go along because the body will have to cooperate. But that person will actually step forward and take charge of that.
Okay.
Otherwise,
all right.
You know, you get into a situation uh-huh. where, like, if you have that part of you who likes to take care of things like that, you know,
mm-hmm.
make sure that.
Mm-hmm.
that the house is nice and that the car is cared for and that the
mm-hmm.
yard is, you know, whatever that is in your life.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't let that person do those things,
mm-hmm.
then and they don't get done then that's when it becomes the person who isn't interested, who doesn't want to, who doesn't care, who wants to be doing something else,
uh-huh.
is constantly getting a harangue about how these things aren't being done.
Oh, okay.
But if we line up the person mm-hmm. with the job, mm-hmm. then what we're doing really is letting everybody be fulfilled. And, you know, when you have a team of people who are all fulfilled, that's mm-hmm. that's a happy group of people.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when you were speaking, you reminded me of, sometimes what I notice myself doing is I'll, like, say there's a house project or something. Say there's a big house project and it's going to take a long time. It's like I'm not sure who, I have to look at that, but we'll be focusing on that. But it's like I'll say, okay, we're not going to do any of this other stuff until we get this done.
Right. And that's a different person, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's different from the person who likes to do whatever it is.
Right.
Now, there may be a tendency, so I just did curtains in my house. Well, I'm halfway mm-hmm. through curtains in my house. And so the person who wanted to do that project just did it until I was ready to collapse. But it was fun. You know,
yeah.
That person didn't want to do anything else. No, but it was a good time. You know, there was time to do it. And so it really felt like, you know, like taking a weekend off to go to the beach mm-hmm. and not taking any work, just mm-hmm. letting that person mm-hmm. have that time to do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Then if somebody mm-hmm. else comes in and says, no, you cannot go to bed because you haven't finished this, then we've slipped into a different arena.
Yeah, or you can't go out and...
Yeah, you can't do anything else until this is finished.
Right.
That's egocentric karmic conditioning or self-hate or
yep.
some combination of them.
Yeah. Okay, that's very helpful. Okay, Sherry, I could talk a lot, but I just want to ask or just bring up one other thing. I've been looking at energy, how energy
uh-huh.
moves through and stuff, and I noticed recently I took a trip with some people. Actually, we drove separately, but it was like a fun thing. People I enjoy, fun. Energy goes up, like, a lot. And I noticed as I was driving home from the thing that there's a process that happens to stop that flow of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I don't know that I was present for all of it, but I just wanted to share that I do have some pieces of it, and I've decided to try and arrange, like, other events, you know, for Virginia to participate in that raise energy.
Yeah.
And
also watch how conditioning tries to take it away.
Right.
Because it's not that it's shutting it down.
Okay.
It's taking it.
It's taking it.
Mm-hmm. So you're going along, and you're having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And if we were to look at it as a little, you know, it's a water balloon, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and it's being squeezed in the middle, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you squeeze it more on this side gets little and that side gets really big.
Mm-hmm.
Then you squeeze the other side, and it gets little and
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, can you picture that?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there you are. You're doing something that's really fun. And so you're expanding, expanding, expanding. And conditioning is getting smaller and smaller and smaller because you're not giving any attention or focus to conditioning. So it's not being fed.
Okay.
Then at a certain point, it asserts itself.
Mm-hmm.
It gets the attention, and it starts expanding. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and you're getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
Right.
And you can actually feel that kind of deflated... the party's over.
Yeah.
That's what has happened. The energy
okay.
has just been sucked out of you, and it's gone to conditioning.
Okay. Okay.
So yeah, to do things to watch that happen. Absolutely.
Yeah. I just feel like I really want to go after it, and it was fascinating too because I noticed that, you know, in the like, there's a story that you just stayed up too late and you got tired, but that's really not it, actually.
No, no. Yeah. That story, you're so right. That story is camouflage.
Yeah,
you're camouflage. Meant to fall for that and then feel bad. It's your fault.
Yeah,
you
right.
Up too late instead of catching on to what's really going on. And here's just one more, and then I'll let you go.
Mm-hmm.
When you realize, oh, it just sucked all the energy out of me, you go. You can turn to it and yell something like, uh-uh, it's my energy. And in that, in bringing that focus and in saying that and in asserting yourself in that way, you'll get the energy back.
Wow, okay. Thanks. Okay, great, Sherry. I have a mission.
You have a project.
Yep.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Virginia. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Great. We have three more callers here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Good evening. This is Beth.
Woo, that's a bad connection. Try that again.
Hi, Sherry. This is Beth.
Hey, Beth. You're kind of strobing a little bit. I don't know if it's...
Strobing.
Pardon me?
Strobing, okay. I don't know. I don't know what to do about that.
Yeah, me either. So far, I can understand you. So we'll go with that.
Okay. I'm in over my head.
You're in over your head?
Yep.
Uh-huh. Say more about that.
Well, I'm dealing with, I'm kind of remembering Christ on the cross where he says, Father, forgive them for they know not what they do. And dealing with people who know not what they do.
Uh-huh.
I had to call the police tonight, and I have to call the probation. I have to go before the magistrate in the next 24 hours.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not really clear sure what the practice is. I'm not sure.
You know, Beth, I really am having a hard time understanding you. Michael, are you having trouble?
Yes.
Yeah. There's something about the phone, Beth. It just keeps cutting in and out. So I'll kind of hear a syllable and then not the next one and then hear the next one. And so it makes it difficult. So I'm just going to – maybe we'll try just going a little slower, all right?
Okay.
So it sounds like something legal has happened and you're in a position of needing to, bring charges against somebody or bear witness against somebody, or if that's the expression?
Well, I have, this will be a big surprise, I have a tendency to hide.
Uh-huh.
So the natural thing for me to do is just like sweep it under the rug.
Uh-huh.
Conditioned response.
Whatever it is.
Just in every situation, I'll find the place to hide first.
Uh-huh.
And I've done it again and yet again. I'm in a situation now where there is nowhere to hide.
Okay. So this situation, if nothing else, it sounds like there are enough people involved who are not supportive of hiding. Yeah? I mean, these are people
yeah.
that can't just say, oh, no, I don't feel like talking about that.
Right. Well, talking isn't working. We had a day of meditation and then had a meeting and brought a lot of space and just listened, and reflective listening, came to a good place with it. And then the next day, there's a whole story there, and I know the story isn't where the answer is because I've been telling myself the story again and yet again, and there is no solution. But it's kind of like how to take care of myself in this situation. And it's kind of like it's not any different than anything I've been dealing with in the last 2 years. It's the same thing yet again.
Uh-huh.
It's just a different form.
Okay. Did you say 2 or 10?
2 years.
1, 2. 2. Okay.
1, 2.
Okay.
Wow, bad connection, huh?
Yeah, it's bad connection. But I think I'm tracking.
Okay.
Okay. So what you're seeing is this is a a slight variation on a very familiar theme.
Yes.
And what you want to know is how to take care of yourself within this situation.
Yes, because, you know, like, this is really putting myself out there. This is not a popular act. My greatest fear is somebody to be angry with me. Well, they're angry with me.
So your greatest fear is that someone will be angry with you, and that is what's happening.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And it's horrible. It's every part of my conditioning is it's just not fun.
Okay. Well, now, the thing that strikes me about that, Beth, is if it really weren't fun, would you really keep doing it over and over?
It doesn't feel like, it feels like the part that I'm doing is my response, but it seems like there's just been a series of major losses. And it feels like it's the same thing. It's something externally that's gotten beyond my control.
Right. And yet, let's see, how do I say this clearly? The only thing in life that is consistent is karma.
Yes.
Yeah? So if you are in a situation over and over and over and over and over, then it cannot be random. It cannot be just what's arising. When that happens to us, we can get a sense that it's something we're doing. Yeah?
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, I understand.
Uh-huh.
But it's also, it's like these different layers, they're not the same story. I'm the only consistent thing within them, and my reaction I'm seeing is consistent within all of them. And my reaction is to hide.
Okay. If I understood that. So there is variation in this. And yet, what it comes to is the same place of you wanting to hide.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Desperately.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, I know that there's a burning, and there's you know, even in this situation, there's a path that to freedom.
Yeah. And what would that look like?
What I'm seeing is just how strongly I'm clinging to the story.
Yeah.
There's like an unwillingness to see that.
Yeah. That's the part that I was pointing at a little bit ago. Somebody says, I really don't like this. But if I really don't like it, I'll stop doing it. So, you know, this is good because you know how to stop doing this. Now, you may not know you know it, so shall I just go ahead and tell you?
Yeah, that'd probably be useful.
Okay. Stop hiding. Stop hiding. Stop trying to hide. Stop talking about hiding. So if, you know, all of my life, the one thing I never want to do is have to perform in public. I don't want to have to perform in public. But doggone it. I mean, time after time after time after time, things conspire against me and I wind up being in this position to have to perform in public.
Hmm.
Okay.
So, yes, it does feel like that. Like I didn't get it the first time, so I'm being presented with the opportunity for the fourth time.
That's right. So if I want to get out of this little revolving door, then the thing to do is start performing in public.
So I have to get people angry at me.
Well, and that, you know, for most of us, that's not all that hard.
No, it's not.
So, what if you lost interest in that? What if you stopped framing it that way? What if you started talking about it as something completely different? You see, we wind up in the same place because we keep making the same choices at every juncture. We tell ourselves the same story. We have the same reasons for doing what we're doing. We have the same reasons for not doing what we're not doing. And so, of course,
it's happening to me.
It keeps happening to me. So change your part of it. The thing about it is, if you all of a sudden decided that you wanted to perform in public, I bet people would really stop asking you.
Okay.
Got it? You must, because the connection is clearer.
That's probably it. I want to wake up. I don't want to keep doing this.
Okay, well then the route is clear ahead of you.
Okay.
And on every level, let me give it to you. In the body, on the sensation level, it's going to feel like all your nerve endings are trying to crawl out of your skin.
Yeah.
Okay. It's going to be anxiety and panic. It's going to, the voices
yep.
are going to be going crazy. Yeah. And so as long
yep.
as that's going on, you know you're going in the right direction.
Whistling in hell.
Pardon me?
Whistling in hell.
Whistling in hell.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. If it subsides, accelerate.
I have no response.
Just say, okay, Sherry, I'll let you know.
Thank you, Sherry. I'll let you know.
No. Not thank you, Sherry. Okay, Sherry, I got it. I'll let you know.
Okay, Sherry.
All right.
I'll let you know.
All right.
Okay.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to have a quick sponsor break here, and then we'll be back.
All right.
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have two more callers here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Deb from New Jersey.
Hello there.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. And yourself?
I'm great. I'm calling as a follow-up, even though this is the first time I've ever called in.
Okay.
And the way that worked out is you read my email last week.
I see.
What was it
and what did we say?
That was back when I was in, I lived in New York, and I saw you at Integral Yoga, and I said I would call, but I just didn't know when. But then I emailed you because my cat was dying.
Yes.
Yeah, and even hearing that brought it all back because I was in such a bad place when that was going on. However, there's good news as well. But so I'm calling in just to follow up to let you know how I dealt with that whole thing.
Right.
And I could tell I was so identified. I was in such a bad place because I had chosen before she got that ill to sit with her until she passed away. I didn't want to, you know, put her down or take her to the vet or anything like that. And there were a couple people in my life that were supportive, but for the most part, people would say things like, oh, well, why don't you just take her to the vet, or like, why are you going to do that to yourself and that sort of thing. But I stuck to my guns, and I did sit with her right until the end. And I think just coming from that authentic place and doing what really felt right to me is what I'm calling the good news about, you know,
yeah,
going through that week, because it was a rough week. There's no doubt about it, but it was worth it to me.
Yes, yeah. And not to interrupt you too much, but it's what we were talking earlier about with the money, with the work, with the way you frame that, to me, captures it really well. It is staying in that place of authenticity. That's what makes the change. Not
absolutely.
Not going with the voices, internal or external, that say, no, you should be doing something else, but really sticking with yourself.
Yeah, and I look at that as a triumph. Now, that email to you, that was when I was really hitting a low. And when I heard that, I'm like, oh, boy, I really remember what that was like. Even sending it helped to put it out there because I couldn't talk to anybody about it and be sure they would say the right thing to me. So I figured, let me send the email out. And it really kind of, it dissipated somewhat. Mm-hmm. But I knew what I wanted to do. I had done hospice work for years. I know maybe a little bit more about death, or I thought about it more than maybe some people, and I was so sure about what I wanted to do for her, you know, to just sit with my cat. And so that's the good news. And, of course, my practice helped because it was like a week-long sitting practice, because that's really all I did with her was sit.
A little retreat for the two of you.
Yeah, a painful one, but, you know, one that I was really, you know, I'm pleased that I ended up sticking to my gun, so to speak.
Yeah, and the distinction there, painful, not suffering.
Yeah, I no doubt, I flipped in and out of, you know, oh, God, can I do this?
Right.
You know, not being sure if I could weather it, but I did, and I think it's coming from that authentic place and really living what I believe in.
Yeah, letting your heart lead the way.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And your work has helped me tremendously. And that was part of it as well, because over the years you've had people, I remember one woman talked about her goldfish, and then you had a vet who was dealing with some of the same, you know, the same issue about, you know, actually putting an animal to sleep. You know, that sort of thing. And those shows were so helpful because I'm like, you know what? I got to do what I got to do.
And it's one of the things that I like best about Buddhism, at least the way we practice Buddhism, and
mm-hmm.
that is that nobody is going to tell us what to do.
Right.
We can have encouragement. We can, you know, we hear from people who have been through this or that and what happened, but in the final analysis, we each have to go through our own experience and have that experience for ourselves. Learn what we learn, see what we see, get what we get, and take the next step.
Absolutely, absolutely. So thank you for all your work and those shows and the archives and all that. And now I've fulfilled my promise that I would call. Well, it was only last year, but okay, I still followed through.
That's right. That's right. And time is an illusion anyway, so there we are.
Oh, there you go. Okay, so I'm set.
Good. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have one more caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Bobby.
Hey, Bobby.
Hi, Sherry. How you doing?
Good. What's going on in your world?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. I recovered from that stroke I sent you a little message about, so that's pretty
good thing.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I've been looking at a practice called Apiata Vedanta, and I remember you describing God as not two, and I see how that practice is like when sitting, abiding, and not two. And it's interesting because therein watches all the stuff that you go flying by that one time you mentioned to me was ego.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I saw this thing. I suffer from a lot of depressions, and it's part of a disease I have, but if I know that it will get better despite of all the stuff that's going on. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and is that from your experience, or is that a matter of trust,
no.
Or how do you?
It's from experience. It's uh-huh. Like, you know, I think beliefs are just the most. Okay, I'm just going to slam some stuff on there. I think there are a lot of lies in beliefs.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Well, it's written right in there, right?
there's
a clue for us.
Right. As children, you're told all these things, and they become beliefs, and you grow older, and you find out, God, they're lying to me.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we can say lying, and of course, after we've been around a while and looked at it, and actually done a little of it ourselves to other people, it kind of becomes a matter of how much of it is actually lying, which implies a consciousness, an awareness of what's going on, and how much is just ignorance. You know,
right.
just people are told stuff that's not true, they believe it, and then they tell other people, and they believe it, and, you know, after enough generations of that, it becomes fact, it's real, it's tradition, it's sacred, it's, you know, all of this stuff, and yet, really, when we look at it closely, it's not our experience.
Right.
Yeah.
I grew up part of my life in the South, and I didn't go along with the program that was going along down there, and it was about the time they were integrating the schools, Ruby Bridges and all that, and I kind of became a meat grinder, and I had a Northern accent at the time. I was born in New Jersey. Well, I had to learn how to talk Southern style real quick just for survival. Now, out of fear, you know, there's certain things that occur. And I've noticed how, out of fear, certain beliefs are responded to and become ideas. And,
yeah.
But I never fell into the trap of that. I just fell in the trap of trying to keep my mouth shut and survive and not being pointed out. Well, we had lived in Texas before we moved there, so they would ask where I was from, and I'd go, Texas. You know?
Uh-huh.
Let it drop a little bit, you know,
uh-huh.
to counteract the fear. But it seems that there's a lot of fear and control around beliefs, so that I want to have a belief about a certain thing, and it gives me a presence of control.
Yes, yes, exactly so. Yeah, but when I think this is what you're saying, as soon as you catch on to the fact that that's what's going on, then you can't do it. Right?
Right.
That's the problem. If you could make stuff up and believe it, then you would have already done that, and you would fit in a lot better.
Right. It doesn't work.
Yeah, it doesn't work. So what we're left with is being present to whatever is in whatever moment we're in, and then there. We're present to it. It doesn't even, there's not even a meaning to it. We don't have to have any relationship to it at all. It's just what arises, and then it passes away, and that's the end of it. We're not even required to remember it.
Right. I remember one time talking to you about baseball, and there's this point of making contact with the ball, and there's nothing there. It's just an awareness that this is going to happen, and it happens. And you saying that you were a pretty good hitter, a pretty good baseball player. Well, I thought that was kind of cool. And one thing I did learn was how to play baseball real good in Claude Fields with a lot of the black sharecroppers and stuff that lived around us. So there was some real good that came out of that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There really was. I mean,
when we're open to it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
When we're open to it, there always. To me, the separation is an illusion. There is only what is, and what is always. Well, it sounds crazy to say, but it's always the same. In other words, it's the same essence. So if we use a word like good to describe that, it's all coming from good. When we are present, good is what we experience.
Right.
Yeah.
When we
step back, when we leave that, not step back in a disidentifying way, but just when we separate, then we see, oh, well, that's good and that's not good and that should be that way, but that shouldn't be that way. And, of course, we just, open wide the doors to suffering.
Right. In awareness, tastelessness tasted good.
Right. Oh, that's very good.
it's interesting to me, but it really does. It's probably one of the best tastes there are.
Uh-huh.
So, Sherry, I'm going to go, and I'm glad to hear your voice, and I'm glad that we're going to keep the monastery open. And
Me too. And I'm glad you're recovered.
Yeah, we all are recovered. We just don't see it sometimes. Huh?
Exactly. Yeah.
Thanks.
Take care.
Yep.
All right. Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Bobby. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, an exciting show.
Yeah. Fun people seeing good stuff.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And we have about 5 minutes left, and I have an email question here.
Oh, all right.
Dear Sherry and Michael, I've been listening to the show archives for a good couple of years or so now, but have never called in. Egocentric karmic conditioning is very strong. I suffer with severe depression, do not work, and have a lot of time for the voices to really have a go at me. I'd like to ask about a difficult situation I have coming up this weekend. I've recently been in a relatively long-distance relationship, which lasted just 10 weeks, but was very intense and in which I had placed a lot of hopes. I ended the relationship because I couldn't stand the anxiety levels I was experiencing, unable to eat or sleep. But now the voices are telling me I made a mistake, the problems were all in my head and of my making. The problem is I'm going to a big dance event at the weekend for 4 days, and he is going to be there, and I know I'm going to go through some excruciating feelings seeing him with other women, maybe even his ex-girlfriend. I can't get out of going as someone is depending on me to go. I would just love some advice about how to get through the weekend. I'm trying to see it as a huge practice opportunity to stay present, try to see him as just another person I can dance with or not, with no history, etc., but I really am not convinced at all that I am up to it. Gesho from a listener.
Okay. Is there a date on that email?
Yes.
And so this event is so far in the past now that...
It's in the past, yes.
Yeah. So it's like this weekend coming up, which is now probably weeks or months in the past. It'd be interesting. Maybe the person will call in and tell us how it went. You know,
yes.
The thing that strikes me, well, there are so many things about it. There are just so many things about it. But the one that strikes me most is, for whatever reason, is the I can't get out of going.
Yes.
Well, I'm sorry. Yes, you can. And, you know, it's not that I'm saying, so if something is scary for us, we should just, you know, not do it. That's not the point. The point is the process behind listening to a voice say, this is how it has to be because, and then give some perfectly lame reason, and everybody goes, oh, yeah, well, that's really true. Somebody's counting on you. Okay, well, then you're without choice in this. And it points at, you know, kind of what Bobby was saying just a minute ago. You know, those are the kinds of beliefs that we buy into without ever examining them. And there's tremendous suffering in it. So with everything in that email, it goes back to that same place of listening to the voice of an authority, internal, okay, that voice I would call egocentric karmic conditioning, in relationship with, in cahoots with self-hatred. So the voice, the authority in the head conditioning says blah, blah, blah. And the person listening goes, oh, okay, well, that's true. So that means, and therefore I need to, and okay, it's what we were talking about with Beth. The voice says X, and then the response is, okay, well, since that's the case and that's true and that means that, then I have to. And the whole thing could just be broken down into a fabulous exercise. We just did a workshop called Not What But How, in which we go through the five processes of aspects of the personality, beliefs and assumptions, projection, disidentification, and centering. And, of course, we also pay attention to where attention and awareness are through that process. And that email would be a great retreat for the five processes because it's a constant, I'm looking to the voices of conditioning. They tell me what reality is. I believe what they say. I then have to react. I look to them, they tell me what that means and what's going on and what I have to do and what I can't do and what I should do, and then I have to do that. And then so you can start with the first sentence and just break it down and with everyone say, why? Or is that so? Or who says so?
Yes.
What if that's not true?
Yes.
What if that's not true? What if there's no truth to any of it?
Yes.
Yeah, especially, you know, depression and I'm at home and I don't work and, you know, yeah, there's just so much in that I want the person, first of all, to come on retreat and to start breaking all of that down into manageable chunks to, you know, the person can look at and go, I don't think I'm going to believe that anymore. I think I'm going to look and see what's true for me in this moment and open up that gate and start walking down that path toward freedom.
Wow.
That's what I think, by golly, Michael.
That's a great direction.
Did those construction workers go home?
They're in the background occasionally, yes.
Oh, well, doggone. All right, well, they didn't bother us a bit, so let's do this next week whether they're there or not.
That's a great idea.
All right.
And I'm really grateful for all of our callers, all of our listeners, and also Sequoia for taking our life back.
Yes, I think we're going to be, that quote is going to be around for a good long while, don't you think?
I think it will.
Mm-hmm. And there it'll be. Well, you know, as Sequoia would say. I love it. All right.
Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.